We have a great honor every year. One of the highlights of our guest speaker program, of which there isn't anybody, and this every yeshiva agrees to this statement. There is nobody better at a Q&A than today's guest speaker. Rav Lopiansky is Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Gedolah of Greater Washington, who's a fantastic Talmid Chacham, but somebody who, as you'll see, is just so impressive in his breadth of knowledge and his depth of knowledge, and able to handle questions in any area of Torah in such a profound way. And that's what we look forward to this. Not only the students looking forward, but the Rebbeim look forward to this. Also recently put out a Sefer, which everyone's very excited about, and as we are in our yeshiva as well. One of our alumni, who's very, very close to Rav Yehuda Lopiansky, Benjamin Ehrenkrantz, tipped us off about the Sefer when it was right before it was coming out, and Mitzvah Hashem, we hope to acquire the Sefer to give as a gift for all of you at the end of the year, because it's such an important Sefer, and we're very excited to have Rav Lopiansky today. Thank you.
I'd like to sit. First of all, it's very nice to be here. It is kind of become a mesoris. It's especially nice to recognize my next door neighbor who literally grew up in the house, Noach. And I would like just to make a point about the questions and answers. I think as important as the answers are, the questions are more important. The first word of Torah Shebaal Peh starts with a question, Me'emasai. In other words, it's Torah Shebiksav is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, and Torah Shebaal Peh is what we inquire. And being able to formulate a thoughtful question and pursuing it until we get an answer that sort of is finally Misasher V'Alev is really, that's learning. It's true in Halacha, it's true in Agada, it's true in Hashkafas Olam. So I welcome the questions. Have been always been kind of wide-ranging. It shows that the Tzibur here has a wide-ranging interest. And it's something that I feel the ability to ask a serious question, the ability to be bothered by it and to think about it, and finally to come to a resolution that you feel is emes, is really the heart of this sort of learning. And that's why in many ways I find a question answer sometimes more productive, the question part than the answer part. With that, we've traditionally have, someone's had been the Kairi McGill of the questions. Who's that? What?
I guess I'll start off the questioning.
Okay, sure.
There's a machlokas in the educational world whether or not a Rebbe should demand that smartphones are not used at all, whether a shir should take away the smartphones from the boys so that they'll actually have the mindset to be able to concentrate, or to allow them to learn on their own how to use it, how to moderate their usage of it. What's the, from an educational perspective,
right?
If you take it away, they'll never really learn how to.
So, I would like to use, I guess, a comparison, and you'll excuse me for using such a strong comparison. I'd been involved, I'd been to Kufis, I'd been in places that are rehab places. And there's one Bet Shemesh that I had a kesher with, the one who heads it, Rabbi Eckstein, and I, somewhat tangentially and somewhat I visited the place, and the yesod of addiction and rehab is loss of control, spinning out of control. Now, it always starts with a period of time when you completely negate something, and then you go to a period of time that if you're capable to begin to use things judiciously and in ways that are responsible and productive. Not doing something is a tool. Self-discipline is a tool. And let's give an example in something, let's not go to addiction, arayas. Arayas is the strongest force and drive in a person. If we start with sometimes yes, sometimes not, it'll never work. We start with total control, and then we say, okay, now once I have the ability to say no, I can say yes when needed and no when wrong. It's never a compromise. It always is. They once asked me, a shayla in yeshiva, the board, about, is it mutter to speak Lashon Hara about this? I said, it's never mutter to speak Lashon Hara. It's either asur or mechuyev. You're either a chuyev or you're asur to speak Lashon Hara. It's never mutter. The same thing is true with, let's say, with many things. There are either mechuyev or asur. Mutter doesn't go over there. To be able, I think the biggest problem in chinuch, in yeshiva by us, we've been kind of liberal about smartphone, cell phone, and we've gotten more and more strict, simply because it's never works. People do not have the control. There's a halachic category called Dilma Asil La'am Shuchay. It's the Arayas is Moshech, Minus is Moshech. Certain things have a nature of dragging a person in. So the first step in chinuch is the ability to say no. And it's more than just saying no to a smartphone. It's to know there's a life after smartphone. There's actually the ability to sit for 3-4 hours, not to be busy with something, to be busy with the Gemara, asking, answering, thinking, putting your thoughts together and so on, that becomes enjoyable. Once a person has that built into him, there's going to be a transition where in almost every field in life you do need to use it, but now we'll be able to say, this is what I use, this is what I don't use. I don't need to be available. To be plugged in 24/7 destroys my ability to run my life. The times I need is X, Y, and Z. Of course, if you're an emergency responder, you should have it on all the time. But most people are not emergency responders. Personally, I don't use a cell phone when I'm home because, like I said, I'm not an emergency room physician. I don't need to be on call. Nobody has a kasha and a rashba that needs to be answered within 5 seconds. I assure you. Even in yeshiva by us, people can wait a few minutes for the rashba to be answered. And it destroys my self-discipline. So I listen to my message. I do try to get back to people. You know, I listen twice a day. I have my times. I listen. I do my email. But I try very hard to have my Seder Yom and this. When I travel, I do have a smartphone. I need it. I need it because, you know, I have to order cars, so on and so forth. But I try very hard to make those determinations. In yeshiva, you build a certain discipline, and that discipline, I do think, starts with a big no. The purpose of the no is so that you learn how to live a life that's cell phone free, that you don't need to be hooked in. People are amazed to discover they have their own life. They can think, they can feel, they can contemplate, they can schmooze with a friend. One of the more beautiful yitzharas we had in yeshiva was a bull session with a friend at night. And some of it maybe had not much value, but some of it had some real value. We'd be able to discuss things and think about things. It doesn't exist because it's 3-second responses to people that are not there. So I do believe, and I've come over the years to become more and more believe, there's a tkuf in life when there has to be a strict kind of, you know, whatever way it is, whether it's on Seder time, whether it's only at night, however you do it, but the purpose is to give you the tools so that someday you can make that decision. At what time do you start making that type of decision? It depends. It's hard to tell. And the book, the safe I wrote actually, deals with a different type of issue of the transition of kolol to work, which is also requires a bridge of things that you excluded out of life, you now begin to integrate in a responsible and productive way. It's a tough one, but I do believe there has to be some sort of introductory period where a person gains the tool saying no. Yes, any? You can text Twitter me the questions if you want. Yes, please introduce yourself. What's your name and where are you from?
Daniel Greenfield, Woodhead, New York.
So when it comes to Shia, is there an obligation to believe it will come any second, like right now? Or are you supposed to just like hope that it will come when it's supposed to come? Maybe it will come today, maybe it will come, whatever.
So, I don't know why there would be. So, if a person believes that Moshiach is one of the Yugim Ikrim, he believes in that. Whether it can come now or not, it really is a moot point because Hayad Hashem Tikzer. We believe HaKadosh Baruch Hu could make Kriyas Yamsuf now. So, believing that Moshiach could come now. Is definitely, it's hard for me to see where there would be an issue with that. Once a person has that emuna, I believe the Lashon, the Rambam, that he has to be mitzapelo. The word mitzape, I think, means more anticipate rather than believe that he is coming. And I want to broaden the topic a little bit. When we ask ourselves, when we're hoping for Mashiach, and every drasha ends off somehow Mashiach coming. As somebody once said, when the darshan says and the geula will come in hurriedly, you know the geula has arrived already. You know, at that point, you've been redeemed. So we think of Mashiach as a panacea. Mashiach is something that everybody has his tzaris. This person has health issues, this person has parnassah issues, this person has children need to get married, this person has this, that, the other thing. And we tend to think of Mashiach as the cure-all for our tzaras. It may be true, but then I don't think that would require us to be mitzapeh all the time for it. That's not, there's nothing fundamentally religious, let's say, about that. So we believe, just like we believe HaKadosh Baruch Hu could help us anytime, and a person who lo'aleinu is not well and is being mispalel and hopes and believes HaKadosh Baruch Hu can help, so Mashiach is not different. I think we make a big mistake. Mashiach's job, in the sense that we are going to, that we hope for it, the Rambam says, is the restoration of Klal Yisrael's spiritual tzura, the way it was. We tend to think of ourselves as everything being pretty okay spiritually. Well, we're missing the most important elements of our Yiddishkeit. Two starim and shas are totally irrelevant. Kachem and Tyrus, we're clueless. We have no shastit. So we only have 2/3 of Yiddishkeit. And even of the other parts, we don't have Sanhedrin. And many is Baruch Hashem Zroim or Zocha to begin having. Some of it we have, some of it is up in the air. So we're missing whatever it is in Torah that makes a person Sholem, we're missing. So a person's hope for Geula is the Shleimus of the Tzur of Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael is a real Klal when they have a Melech. The only Achdus in Klal Yisrael is possible with a king. A democracy is not Achdus. It's a wonderful way of running things when there's no leadership, is a consensus. But a consensus really gets things done the right way, the most efficient way, and the best way. As Churchill once said, democracy is a pretty bad form of government. It's just that the other ones are much worse. It's not that democracy is a great. Anyone who's ever sat on a shul committee or has heard his father come back from a meeting in a shul committee will know that it's not a great, but it's the best there is. At least we're doing it by consensus. A king shapes a nation and moves it forward. We have no king. We have no monarchy. We have nothing like it. Melech HaMashiach is a halachic entity. He is the Melech Yisrael with the dinam of Malchus Beis David, who restores that sort of Kaisel. We will be a real nation with real leadership, with a place that expresses our religious yearnings and growth in the fullest way possible, Beis HaMikdash and Karbonis, and a Sanhedrin which will bring justice and Mishpat. So the anticipation of Mashiach is meant to be the expression of a person's ruchnius. If I am satisfied with the ruchnius I have, then I begin to realize that what I have is a drop in the bucket. It's like someone coming to a civilized country and seeing one or two things, and he realizes, I never saw this, running water and heat and air conditioning and cars, and I'm only seeing a drop in the bucket. So I would think that the lashon of achakelo and the lashon of a mitzapeh b'chaleis, mitzapeh means I want it and I anticipate it. It's not just a silly belief it's sometimes when a person really wants something, he thinks it's coming because he's so eager for it. That's a real expression of yearning for Mashiach. A person, lo aleinu, sometimes people who are not well or have relatives are not well, every time they hear about some supposed cure, they run on all four to get to it. It's because of the pressure of wanting it that sometimes mekalkel the seichel. The wanting Mashiach to come and the yearning for a shleimus does sometimes lead to stories about Gdolim that, you know, he's here, I just saw this. But that's the end of the process. It's not the beginning of the process. Yeah. Okay, I was just there actually. Yeah.
What insight does Rebbe give for us to begin learning something that's difficult, like just doing it because we have to, enjoy it?
It used to be $64,000 question. I don't know how much they give today for the big question, but they're obviously coming in yeshiva. So one external etzer and maybe one internal etzer. But first of all, the belief that in a person, there almost everyone has an aptitude for that, just like music. There are sometimes kids, they're 4 years old, and they stand on top of a chair, they play the piano, first shot they're playing something. That's a rarity, but it exists. You have some people that are tone deaf, and they can sit for years, and people pour money into music lessons, and nothing ever happens. And most people, given enough time, begin to develop an aptitude, which means it was there, it was a very recessive gene, let's call it, a latent potential, but it comes. So most people, when they're teenagers, don't really enjoy learning. And many people, as they mature and they're learning, they begin to enjoy it. So the first thing is a belief in yourself that it's, by statistically, it's potentially there. Two, learning has a very hard time competing with anything else. Because learning is very cerebral, because it requires a certain abstraction, anything that is more physical, more readily enjoyable, will usually take your attention span away. And that's why the years that you spend in serious learning, like here, the less unrelated activities, and that's one of the reasons, again, why the 1001 entertainments are problematic. There's such an easy pleasure. It's physical. You see it, you hear it. It's funny, it's easy, it's empty. All of that contributes to making it easy pleasure. It's very hard to fight one. The level, and that's why in yeshivas traditionally, they've been very exclusive of other things. Most yeshivas do not allow anything, no other studies, etc., etc. The reason was because learning usually has a hard time to competing with it. And third of all, I think when you flesh out the learning, one of the things by us in yeshiva that we stress a lot, and I found it has made a world of difference, we push people, we pay, we gave office incentives, is learning Shakla V'Tari Bal Peh. In other words, reading the Gemara as a text is two-dimensional. When you go back and forth, you so to speak act it out. The Mishnah says this and this. How could you possibly say this? And they say, well, that's because you read the Mishnah this way. I read it differently. If you do it in Tosfos, you know, if people don't get the full sense of the argument. And once you're able to get it, then your mind starts working. Do I see it that way? Do I not see it that way? Tosfos says, how could this Gemara go if the Gemara says differently there? Okay, what would I say? What is Tosfos' answer? Could you say differently? Is Rashi trying to anticipate the problem? When your mind begins to become active and you see it as a full, that's why people, when they learn, they become very animated, whether they're speaking with their hands, or they're sort of fleshing out, find that that's a bit, it helps you get engrossed in it and helps it come alive. You can usually tell when somebody's reading a Tosfos if he's living it or if he's translating words. And those are translating words is agony. Living it usually becomes quite enjoyable. So those are three things I would suggest. One is believe that just most people, as they're maturing, begin to have the aptitude to like learning. And just, again, year after year, you see it happen. You 15 and 16-year-olds, you see many people very, very fretting and just not enjoying it. And 22-year-olds and 23-year-olds, you begin to see people that can sit down seriously and really have hanoah from it. Excluding distractions, something that's really engaging and engrossing and absorbing outside of learning is really creates a very difficult obstacle. And finally, understanding that Torah Shebal Peh is a living Torah. It was people who argued, answered, brought rayas, schlugged up the rayas. And if you work it out that way, I think it becomes a lot more exciting. Yes? What's your name? What would you mean? Give me an example. What would you mean judgmental?
Meaning that if you're not going to Seder, then people are going to look down at you. So therefore, that motivates you to go to Seder.
So Rabbi Saul Salanta writes that he writes this in a letter, and there's a story about it that actually it actually happened. He says in order for a person to attain truth, there are two kochos ha-nefesh that are in operation. One is a desire for truth, and one is a desire to be right. He calls it the poisonous koach, which is important. De Velt says, that's what he writes in a letter. De Velt says a story that he once instituted a very strict, kind of respectable conversation policy amongst Talmidim. And at some point he said, I see good midas, but I don't see learning. And he went back to injecting some sort of, I want to see about this judgmental point and be very, very, I think it's important because it goes to many other issues. It is nice that in the Western world today we're not judgmental, but it depends what that's coming from. And we're mixing up two things. Let's describe the following scenarios. Imagine somebody's not well, physically not well. So we recognize, so this person is critically ill. This person has a really, really difficult illness. On the one hand, if you tell the person, listen, you ain't good. Chances are, you're not going to make it out of here, then he probably won't. And it's certainly not the right approach. On the other hand, when you ask yourself to prioritize the sick people and so on, you need to say to yourself, this person needs help a lot. Next, one layer, next layer. In a society, most criminals have reasons why they ended up where they ended up. So somebody's stealing. Most of the time, there's a history behind it. But you want to say, as a society, we want to impress how wrong stealing is. But each criminal himself, I want to try to understand where he's coming from and try to get him to become a good person. If I stop being judgmental in values, then I have no values. And that is doesn't bring a Chorban society, it is the Chorban society. If humans have no right and wrong, they're animals. You've destroyed humanity when you say there's no right and wrong, good and bad. On the other hand, every person, a real psychopath, which means there's something fundamentally flawed in his neshama, is rare. It exists, but it's rare. So most people who are criminal, we want to be able to understand why they became what they became and use that information to bring them back to a place that's good. We live in a world where the vast majority of Klal Yisrael are not Shomer Torah mitzvahs. So what we need to do is we need to retain our sense of values, not to lower it and say, well, some people are nice people because they keep Shabbos, some people are nice people because they plant trees, some people are nice people because they play ball well. That means society is valueless. If everyone has their own values, that's another way of saying there are no absolute values. That is automatically destroyed, so Klal Yisrael is not Klal Yisrael, and humanity is not humanity. You have to stay away from that. What you do want to say is that the people that are not Shomer Torah mitzvahs, they were brought up that way. Society is that way. They've had bad experiences in our world that pushed them out. Let's see. So I need to look at the person as a good person, and I need to retain constantly that the real good is for him to be a Shomer Torah mitzvahs. How do I get him to be Shomer Torah mitzvahs? Because the minute I say there's other good Shomer Torah mitzvahs, I've denied Torah. And it's a big problem. It's a positive development. It used to be in Europe, and I guess because society was a Shomer Mitzvah society, somebody who left the fold, who became weak in Shomer Mitzvahs, was sort of excommunicated. Not technically, but sort of emotionally, socially. And, you know, they were rejected. I don't know, was that the right tool? I can't judge what was. Today, we reach out to people, and that's wonderful. But when you're reaching out to somebody, you need to know where do you want to get him to. Reaching out means I'm stretching out an arm, but the point is to bring him here, not to say you're okay where you are. So that's the emes, and that you have to keep pushing. You keep saying there's right and wrong, and that's absolute. And you have to. Let me tell you a story in a little bit of different context. Rav Weissmandl, for those who heard of Michter Weissmandl, was one of the great rabbanim in Slovakia, and he tried desperately. He was very involved in saving thousands of Jews during World War II. He was, Slovakia was like a bubble. The Nazis did not really control it till almost at the end of the war, and he was able to bring a lot of people out of Poland through Slovakia and so on and so forth. He worked 24/7, literally, including Shabbosim. One of the times he had to, you know, he had to take a train on Shabbos to get something, he cried before he took the train. And the Satmar Rav was very, very taken by it. And so I asked the Satmar Rav, why? He's supposed to do it. It's Pikuach Nefesh. He said, Pikuach Nefesh overrides Shabbos. The danger is you lose your sensitivity to Shabbos. The greatest of Michel Ber was, of course, he was mekayim pikuach nefesh derech Shabbos, but he never stopped losing the sense of Shabbos. And this is in Kirov, it's so difficult. We need to reach out to the other person, understand him, embrace him for the good that he is, and never lose sight of where we want the person to. Yes. What's your name?
Zach Fishman from Tinek. Rashi said before that it's important for us to not just look at the Gemara as words until you see it as a live argument. So why is there such a push in yeshivas to, right when the guys get in, to right away, even if, like, to try and make them understand the original language of the Gemara or any Hebrew sefer that they don't really understand, as opposed to learning the ideas first in English, and then after maybe a year or two of understanding how a Gemara works out, then transitioning into going to Hebrew or Aramaic.
Did you'd automatically make a Shana Bet mandatory? Like that would be part of the good results of that. So let me give you an analogy. When I don't know if how many of you are from New York State. Now everybody lives in New Jersey, they have the regions. We used to have the regions we took, and whoever's from New York State will knows. So when I took the history regions, it switched. It began switching from pure fact, who died, who killed, when, what year, and where. That used to be history, to more of essays and understanding events, and so on and so forth. So on the one hand, it was a good swing of the pendulum. You went from just memorizing, mindless memorization of people you couldn't care less about, and events that you didn't care about, and dates you couldn't care about, to understanding sweeping concepts in history. But the pendulum began to swing very, very far to the other direction, and now people will do like, you know, I think French Revolution was great, it was wonderful. Well, tell me about it. When did it happen? What were the events? I don't know, but I just know that the idea of the French Revolution is very good. People began to write stuff where facts were of very little value in their essay, which meant the pendulum swung to feelings without actually information. We are arguing about points in Torah Shabbat Peh. What does the Gemara say? What does the Gemara want to say? Whenever you translate, you lose an awful lot of that. I like learning, lahavdul, I like reading. I can't look at English translations of English stuff on Jewish topics, even though I wrote in English, but still I have a hard time because I know it's not accurate. It's never exact. And at some point, if you get into the habit of reading the English, people will ask me, there was somebody who had dyslexia and he would ask me questions a lot. It was based on his reading the English and the imprecision was terrible. It's like imagine wearing glasses, two numbers less than what you need. So you can make out the people, but it drives you out of your mind that the people all blurs. It's like, you know, everything, it's kind of, I know the information pretty much, but I don't have the sharpness of the precision, the resolution. That's a real problem. So it's a hurdle, and ideally it should have been earlier, when you're younger a bit, but once you have the words themselves give over that information. And that's why it's necessary, but I would shudder at somebody starting his basic information with English. Yes, what's your name?
Max, the words from Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Philosophical Rishu said, is it better for someone to, like for example, Shai Mikra with Rashi, is it better to be able to do the entire Parsha with the Rashi English, or is it better just to do whatever you can and not finish the entire Parsha?
So, like everything else, there is a balance. You can fill in. I'm not against using an article Gemara or any English translation Gemara, and the same thing is true with Rashi. But you have to put an appreciable amount of time aside for learning to read the Hebrew. So there's a balance. I don't know you, and your rebbe was in a much better position. But it's critical that eventually you can have a reasonable familiarity with Rashi. Even the words in Rashi and Chumash, there's something about the Lashon Kodesh that gives over so much more than a translation. Just the kedusha of Lashon Kodesh, the kedusha of the words, there's some quality to it. So yes, learning so that you get the ideas, especially Chumash and Rashi, which are most important ideas, and slowly getting a feel for the for the um, for for the Lashon Kodesh, so that at some point you can do it. It's like when a person is learning how to walk, you know, Lo Aleinu, a grown-up is doing rehab. So you first hold on, and then every so often you let go and you take a step without holding on, and it might be faltering, it might be difficult, but that's the only way you transition to independent walking. So I would say the same thing. It is good to know Chumash and Rashi is very important. It's very basic. And if Hebrew is just too difficult to all of it, yes, do it in English. But give yourself every week a segment of time that you do one, two, whatever amount of Rashi you need to be able to break your teeth and to get into it. Yes? What's your name? Toronto, yeah. So let's go slowly. Somebody once came to an orphanage and was given a tour, and then he asked. He was very moved by their plight. These kids have nothing, and so he said, "You know, I like to order clothing for all the orphans. What size suit does an orphan wear?" In other words, these are things that are individual decisions. Co-ed education has a lot of challenges, least of which is that it takes your mind away from anything else. So if a person is sitting and learning, it's meant to be that way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu engineered the Bria that when a man and woman meet, they will get married. They're drawn to each other, they're, you know, and on. So a person ends up spending a lot of unproductive time. Unless he's holding by a shidduch at that point. But if he's not, the least of the problems is that. You know, we're talking about somebody who's really is on top of himself and can make red lines. But more than that, it tends to really... So that's why, as a default choice, there's a reason why single gender is preferable. There are extenuating circumstances. It may be for you in a special position, whatever it is, that a certain place would be ideal, even though it's co-ed. I can't say, but I just want to explain. Besides the nisyonos of kedusha and co-ed, even if the person is really, really in control of himself, the amount of time that gets lost in sicha b'teila, which at this point is unproductive, when a person chooses now's the time to establish a house, the conversation and the process is kadosh. It becomes part of the of bonding, but a non-bonding bonding is just at best it's fruitless. And that's why, as a default setting, one would certainly choose a place that's single gender. If there are other circumstances, that's what you have a rebbeim for, to talk over your personal position and needs, and you know, for everything there's always an exception. Yes.
Eliezer Heller from Maryland.
Wow.
My dad, Dr. Heller.
Whoa, Eliezer. Your dad is Dr. Heller. I spoke at your bar mitzvah. Oh, you've grown in many ways, Baruch Hashem. What? Yes.
When we go out, we go to college.
By the way, his father and his mother, they are tzaddikim of a whole different caliber. His father is a great researcher in NIH who's available nonstop for people to consult with tremendous wisdom. His mother has put herself into sulam. The Bliyan Harat's a very special family. That I could say, just kind of shocked me a little bit, you know, when you get to. Yeah.
When we go into our careers, we spend a tremendous amount of hours working. But we're meant to integrate Torah with our lives.
Yes.
And Torah should be the ikar of our day. But how do we explain or rationalize having a career that could possibly have nothing to do with Torah? It might not be, like, it's a means of parnasa, but it's nothing else. Is that okay? Is that something that we should settle for?
So, This is not a collusion. He's not advertising my book. So even though it's a topic that I deal with a lot, and I want to tell you, I think it's a very thoughtful question. I think asking that question itself is a madriga. I'm serious. I'm playing. For most people, it seems two different activities. Now, there are some careers where they're obvious. For instance, some like your parents do, where it's very clear, your father's a doctor doing research and constantly, you know, in other words, the point is to help sick people and to help cure people, to do it honestly, faithfully, to be of help to people who need his advice and so on. Some careers are obvious and easy. Some careers are more challenging. So I'd like to, and I think it's the challenge not only here, it's the challenge in the so-called black hat yeshivas, and that's where I wrote my book. If people who studied in Kola now are looking for parnasa, sometimes they're not even choosing career, they're choosing a job. So somebody tells them, you know, I do mortgages, would you come on the bandwagon and it'll give you parnasa? That's their choices are less limited, they have less career choices, so it's basically a parnasa. So people struggle with that. I'm going from a world that is cool of ruchnis to a world that seems to be totally void of it. So I want to put 2, 3, 4 points into it. Again, this is, hopefully you will struggle with this issue. Hopefully your ruchnis that you attain here will be meaningful enough that you're going to ask yourself, what am I spending most of my days doing? So, if you choose a career that is directly helpful, like a person is a doctor, a person is a teacher, a person is a therapist, there are professions where you can directly see what you're doing for people. That is one madrega. A second madrega is oskim b'yeshuvah shel olam, meaning making this world a good world physically to live in. The Rabbi Sol Salanta said, there's a medrash, it's not a real medrash, it's medrash talpiyas and other places, not brought in the real chazal. It says, Chanoch was meyachet yichudim, when he sewed, he was a cobbler, he sewed shoes, and it was meyached yichudim when he sold those shoes. Meyached yichudim, the simple explanation means that he thought high Kabbalistic thoughts when he was doing it. Rabbi Yisrael Salanta said it means that every stitch that he put into it, he said, I would like this stitch to be perfect because somebody's going to wear these shoes and I want it to be good. When a person does something that directly helps people, a person's building, construction, if I do it right, I know I can do shoddy work and I can do it wholeheartedly, there's a certain, that's osig b'yeshivah shel olam in a very positive way. If a person knows he makes the effort, everyone who has a profession knows he can do a schlock job, it's quicker, it's easier, or he can really put himself in and do it right. As long as a person is coming from a Torah shkafa, that I'm doing it right, then there's already a sense of purpose. That people live in comfortable houses, the houses they live in are pleasant, because I've done a good job. It means taking effort on my part. It means investing myself because I recognize what I'm doing is good. That's also a way to go. Next, the Torah gave many halachas about business, honesty, keeping your word, not honest advertising, and so on and so forth. A lot of halachas, I mean, all of Choshen Mishpat relates to a world of business interaction. There will be many, many nisyonos. There'll be many, many tests on a person's honesty. If he knows that every moment, there's always an issue of, it may not be usher, but is it l'chatchila, not chatchila? Am I keeping my word? Am I doing what I'm supposed to do? All these things lend a tremendous amount of kedusha to it. There was once a boy in our yeshiva who came from a very materialistic background. Not Maryland. No materialism in Maryland. A different place. And he said, he wasn't that interested in learning, and he said, Rebbe, I think that Hashem wants me to earn a lot of money, I should be able to give a lot of tzedakah. I should be in business, earn a lot of money, give a lot of tzedakah. So I told him, you know, Shmuley, maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to be in business and you have a lot of nisyonos with honesty and integrity. You don't make a lot of money, but every money you make is really honest and integrous. No, he says, I think HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to make a lot of money and give a lot of tzedakah. I said, I don't know, maybe Hashem wants you not to make a lot of money, but every dollar you earn should be very honest and integrous. He did not like that at all. He was like Meitiv Cholam afterwards, just to make sure that I wasn't right. When a person is in a work environment, and there are a lot of nisyonos, and a person is able to be steadfast with his honesty, erudkeit, and many other things that demands interaction with other people. If it's a place where people's standard of conduct is less than ideal, and you keep a person's interaction with women, and so on. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has made a world, nisyonos are not problems, they're challenges. And when a person stands fast in a nisyon, it's not just that he hasn't lost, he's gained. Yosef HaTzadik didn't not do an Avera, he became a Tzadik. Because he stood fast, he's called Tzadik. It's a positive value. A person is honest. A person is yasher. All of those midas, a person gains. So we have different levels. You have sometimes a type of work which directly gives you sense of satisfaction. And if it's within the range of your talents and opportunities, ashrecha matov. Sometimes it means the person is doing very creative and constructive things. And sometimes it's just the nisyonos. Someone asked me this question recently, and he phrased it in a way that I really had a hard time answering it. The person said, Rebbe, my job is to make rich people richer. Is there any value to that? You know, the way he put it is, he doesn't see value in what he's doing to society. He doesn't see value in what he's doing to anything. It's just finding smart ways to invest. It's hard when a person phrases it that way. But the nisyonos a person goes through every day, when a person is able to learn every day, despite the fact that he's tired, the fact that the person is supporting a family and bringing up children to be over the Hashem and to do what's right and to learn and so on, all of those things, if a person looks at the big picture of life, I think that's where we gain a sense of purpose in what we're doing. Yes, what's your name?
Simpli.
What?
Simpli Galvin from Miami. How do we know
so, you know, just like when a person goes to a gym, you usually have a trainer, and Yeshiva Baruch Hashem has a wonderful staff, really an amazing staff. I mean, I know David's brother, I know first, and I actually know David's in-laws from the Lower East Side. I know many of the staff here. It's a good thing to ask people, that's one. Two, just like when you're working out, you try a step and you see how it sits on you. If it becomes, if you feel sore and Charlie, you know you've pushed too hard. If it feels okay, just more strain, you keep going at it and go weiter and weiter. If you start feeling frustrated, upset, and so on, after two or three, let's say you added another half hour Seder, and after a week, you still feel very choked by it, then go back a bit. You can't keep learning when you're constantly feeling very frustrated. But you can always keep trying another step. And generally speaking, that's a guide. And Rebbeim have experience with people like you, and they get a sense of what makes sense for you to try next. Yes?
John Braverman with Orange Jersey.
You know my cousin Berliner? Ed Berliner, what?
His name sounds familiar.
Yeah.
So
you would have gotten an extra point for that. That would almost like Helen.
We spoke about Mashiach a little bit earlier. We spoke about the why and the when more. But something that's bothersome is the how, because we in our Shemona Esrei, and even I think it says in the Gemara maybe that when you go for Shemayim, we're going to ask you, like, did you, Hashem's going to ask, did you expect to hear the Mashiach? But it's very hard to connect to at this point in our lives. Do you have any advice on how to?
So, it's like many things. Let's take something else. Imagine a person's ambition to get ahead with his career. Everybody has an ambition to. It doesn't express itself equally all the time, but a person, it's always under the surface. I want to advance. You know, there's the next level to move up to. So this is something which is a very permanent part of yourself, a very integral part of yourself. But the strength, so maybe the next time a job opens up, you really say, oh, I got to move forward. What does it take to get there? And so on and so forth. The rest of the time, it's just underlying. When a person has a Ruach Nistik moment, a Yom Kippur, a person finishes Yom Kippur, and he feels very uplifted, very elevated. A person finishes a Seder at night, a Pesach Seder. A person finishes learning a long Seder, he feels good. And a person understands this is the world of Ruach Nistik at the entrance level. There's so much more to be had. Whenever a person has an especially inspiring moment, if he would understand that this is only the beginning of it, and Mashiach's full sense is a full world like that, that's helpful. You can't have that, unless you're a very special neshama, you can't have that intense emotional drive every minute. Just like a normal person doesn't sit and think of how do I get ahead, how do I get ahead, how do I get ahead, but it's always there. If he sees an opportunity, someone comes and offers a job and says, you're working as an associate, I come to my firm, you'll be a senior partner. As soon as he says that, I jump. Even though I wasn't thinking about it before, because it's in me, it's within me, it's something that's laying within me. And that's and that's what it would be like. Yes. When is the gula coming here? Another 10 minutes. Okay, Seder. I'm not being mechake for it, but I just wanted. Yeah. Sorry. What's that? It's very interesting. The Balat Tanya writes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mechabe machshava to maisa. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mitzaref machshava to maisa. So he says, even though we're in total control of our thoughts, we're in total control of our actions, we're not really in control of our emotions. He says, sometimes there's a people who don't have strong emotions naturally. As long as the machshava and maisa are in place, they connect. What you really need to ask yourself is it that, you know, some people have much less regesh than other people? Some people have a regesh, but it's in some other area. So if a person is naturally devoid of strong emotions, then that's not your tevin, and then I would take the Balat Tanya's words of being mitzarev machshava to maisa and say, I'm doing what's right, I'm learning and understanding, and the rest of it, this is me, I'm not so emotional. But if a person is very, very emotional about certain things, a person is very into, I don't know, music of some sort, but he doesn't feel it, then the question is, how do we translate what makes me emotional into Yiddishkeit? So I think it really depends on that. That's where the crux of the issue is. If a person has an area where he has strong emotions, you have to ask yourself, how do I translate and find that nekuda in Yiddishkeit? Because if you have emotions, and in Yiddishkeit you don't have those emotions, it's not going to stick. Yes?
After a person goes for like a year, 2 years in yeshiva, and then he goes back to his community, and the community is not so broke, how does a person go about not maintaining their religion, but progressing their religion?
So the first thing is, it's like any time when a person goes into space or deep sea diving, he recognizes it's an environment that doesn't have what he needs, and therefore there's two aces. He takes either a reserve of oxygen, or he has a line going to a place where there is oxygen. Understanding that wherever you are in an environment, if you can't get your chias to that environment, so A, you need to understand who you are and you're getting your chias from wherever you came from, but reconnecting constantly is vital. Baruch Hashem, today people have Yarchikalas are popular. We have an alumni share on Skype once a week. We found out to be, I mean, it's amazing. Wherever the alumni are, they can. I know other yeshivas have a setup like that where they'll have shiurim. You can interact on Skype. You can come and visit. I know it's become popular during break. People come back to yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael. I think it's a phenomenal thing. And like I said, Yarchikalas. Understand that unless you're connected still to something else, you will become part of that society. So you want to, A, some people have it during their learning state. They learn in a way that they connect to what. The Mir Yeshiva has an Ion Seder worldwide for Talmidim. I mean, I assume anyone else can latch in, but a Rebbe says a Shir once a week on it still. The sense of being connected in yeshivas, people come back Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur to yeshiva. The Mir Yeshiva would be full of people coming back to reconnect. By us, younger light, who've moved out the first few years before it becomes difficult with kids, come back Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. My children at Israel, my son's going to Chevron, until recently was going, I think still might go for Yom Kippur to Chevron. Those are things, I think you put a very good point, a very good description. You're in an environment that's not feeding your neshama at the level you are. You need to ask yourself, how do I keep getting my nourishment from those places? Yeah, maybe one more question. Yeah.
Marcus from Riverdale. When someone is trying to evaluate precious and, you know, removing gospels from their lives, for example, how do they really feel that it's the correct decision based off of either, you know, one community where if you have, for example, two pairs of shoes, that's absurd, but, you know, that community on the right, you know, if you have two pairs of shoes, everyone has 10 pairs of shoes. So how do you understand which type of, you know, throwing gospels away is the correct for you?
So the first choice to make, and this goes with some that you've said, your biggest decision in life will be what community are you part of? Because at the end of the day, it's very unhealthy and it's untenable to live at a different standard than the people around you. With all the talk about being your own person, which is true, but at the end of the day, your default setting will be a community. It's a halacha. Makom shenagu. The general halachic rulings of a community. People make a mistake. A community's rulings are more mechayev than parents, except that most of the time today we don't have such a real tour of a community. You're in New York, what's a community? Any place you feel like davening. It's harder. But generally speaking, the standards, you can't live with one pair of shoes in a community where everybody has 10 pairs of shoes. You're standing out, it's what halacha calls minat matmihin, you're strange. On the other hand, to live in a community where everybody has one pair of shoes, you have 10 pairs of shoes, someone asked me about this, he comes from a very wealthy family, he's a real starker ben Torah, he doesn't want to live in the type of community he comes from. So he asked me about living in a kolo community. I said, only if you can live the standard of life they have. You can't be driving a fancy van where they're taking the bus. It's not just all. I said, you can't do that. And so make up your mind. You need to find what you can live with and be part of that community. It's true in Ruchnius. To live in a community that is in very high madrega in Ruchnius, but you're not there, but you just hope their influence is going to be good, that's not a wise choice unless you can be like that. On the other hand, living in a community that's easy and loose, and you'll say, no, but I know I have my values and this and that, that's nonsense. You will become like the people like you. And that's why it's very important to choose a community. Ask yourself, what's the community with values that are real? I want to tell you one of the biggest nachas ruachs as a Rebbe that I've had, as a mechanech. There was somebody learned by us 20 years ago. The person was a good kid, but I wouldn't say the strongest learner and the most serious of all students. A good, you know, geschmacke boy, very nice. And he went off in whatever career, and he lived for a few years, you know, a place like a you know, young couple type situation. He calls me up and says, Rebbe, I have a very important decision to make. We can move to either A or B as our permanent community. Where do you think my ruchnius will be better? I was blown away and I said, this is what you hope for. That a person 10 years down the road, and he's settling in and says, my main issue is not which has nicer stores, which is closer to this, which has, you know, fancier that or the other thing. First says, what do I think will give him the best ruchnistic environment? I thought that that was, I had tremendous nachzuruch. It'll probably be, after choosing the yeshiva you went to, the next most important decision is going to be, what's a community to live in? And you have to ask yourself, where are people serious over the Hashem? Where are people into other things? It doesn't make a difference the color hat or yarmulke or whatever it is. Are these people into material stuff in a way that I don't need to be there? Are they into, do they have values and care about things and serious about things? Can I fit into that community? That I think is going to be, Be'ez Hashem, your biggest choice. And u'bacharta b'chayim, I think that that will be what your life will look like. And Be'ez Hashem, you should find A, communities and environments that give you the most ruchnias, and always remain connected to your yeshiva. It's something that I can't encourage enough. Traditionally, yeshiva was a home. A person came back on Yom Neroyim, a person called his Rebbeim, a person would come and spend time occasionally there, whether it's a day, a weekend, a week. That was, you always were part of the yeshiva. This is the yeshiva that formed you, and that they're part of it. Those are the two most important things for moving forward, Be'ez Hashem.
Could the Rashiya comment on the qualities that young men should look for in Be'ez Hashem in a few years in terms of marriage?
You're talking about a partner. So, hopefully, the first and foremost quality is, what is the lifestyle the person is looking for? And lifestyle, I'm talking about more practical things. In other words, is the person anticipating a husband who will spend every evening with her, or anticipating a husband that will go at least two or three times to learn? Is a husband who's davens in it with a minyan as a norm something important or not important? I would say to make a list of practical details that describe what you see yourself as ruchnis yourself. You're not looking for a mashgiach to make you better than you are. I've heard the statement, I want a one that will make me a bentor, make from. No, you're confusing two different jobs. But the woman's natural, for a woman that she was used to a husband leaving, going out to learn at night, she sits and frets and she feels, okay, I got to do it. He said it's very important, and they say it's important, but it creates a problem. If she's used to it and she expects to have a husband sit and have kviyasin, then not only is she okay with it, this is normal life to her. What does the Shabbos table look like? What things are spoken about? What things are not spoken about? No, we'll talk about halacha. Does the person have a sense of a ruchnistic world? Where a Shabbos table, there are things that are just not on the table. I know who won the fill-in, this player, that player, is an important topic. But 6 days a week is enough on the topic. And a Shabbos table doesn't belong. Is there an Isser anywhere, Shacharach? I don't know. I'd have to scratch my head to figure that out. Is it Kedusha Shabbos? I can say emphatically no. Business, really business stuff. And yeah, there's many stuff that halachically is mutter. How somebody ran his business and why it was succeeded, didn't succeed, is not halachically awesome. It doesn't make a difference. What does the Shabbos table look like? What does the Shabbos environment look like? What does the person expect in the broad strokes of another good rule of the thumb is, what yeshivas would she be comfortable sending her kids and me? That should be the first, and that's probably usually the best indicator. If there is a good overlap, that means we have the same ruchnistic picture. If there's no overlap, we'll figure it out. Is a recipe for disaster. So looking for those qualities in broad strokes of ruchnias, and then I would say I think you need to distinguish, and again, I'm talking very broad strokes. There are qualities that make a person an engaging and companion for a night out. Sharp, witty, interesting, fun, etc. There are qualities that make a person a life partner. Maturity, understanding, ease of person, and things like that. If for a person who's mature to understand those basic qualities, I need to be able to live with a person at Me'ev Esrim and go through a lot of not easy things. Life is a work. It's something we are Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us a lifetime to build something. The basic qualities of that is seichel and a certain ratzon tov, a person who wants good, has an ease with people, and has maturity and seichel. They're not the first things you see on a pleasant date. You can just have a lot of fun. The person is engaging and fun and attractive. But you need to be able to pull back a bit and ask yourself, okay, what are the qualities of the person as a person? And again, I'm throwing kind of out of this picture. I'm taking basic things. So the two things to me that I think are most important are, one, in broad strokes, if ruchnistic life is important to you, in broad strokes, is your ruchnistic life look like that person's ruchnistic life? What happens if, where you would feel comfortable sending your children to yeshiva is a good indication of where the other person wants, what is tzuris. And you don't have to be judgmental. You can just say, we're not the same page. It doesn't make a difference, right, left, up, down, more chumra, less chumra. It has to be fit well. Two, you're after yourself, what are the basic qualities to go through life? Life means challenging. It's work is challenging, and a home is challenging, and children are challenging, a community is challenging. They all present opportunities and challenges. Do you think the person has qualities that make them ready to build a home together? And you shouldn't also hesitate to look in the mirror and ask yourself if you have these qualities. Not only the wife that needs to bring qualities to the marriage. You have to ask yourself, is my ruchnistic world fairly clear? Do I have the ability to get along with people even if it's not easy? And do I have das and seichel and understand life? Those, I think, are important qualities. Okay, Bez Hashem, be matzliach, you still have...
give a tremendous akar sotot for Rav Lapiansky, who came today and gave us a tremendous amount of chizuk and shared his story with us. Yeah, thank you so much. We're going to daven mincha now. Daven mincha right now. Ashrei Yishmei V'techa V'chazel Ashrei.